Post-election violence hits several major U.S. cities. Several people are stabbed and one is shot during rival rallies. British ministers reportedly warn supermarkets and drugstores of food and medicine shortages amid the possibility of a no-deal Brexit. Tens of thousands of Indian farmers again gather near New Delhi to show anger at three agricultural bills passed by the government. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Starting with some developments in the United States, four people have been stabbed and one is shot during rallies in major cities in support and against President Trump's claims of election fraud. Scuffles broke out in many places, mostly after nightfall, between Trump supporters and counter-protesters. Washington, D.C. was a scene of fierce clashes during which four people were stabbed. Officials say they were hospitalized with serious injuries. A shooting happened in Olympia, the capital of the state of Washington. Hours earlier, Trump's most fervent supporters rallied in Washington, D.C. to protest what they call a fraudulent election.
It was a packed day for Trump supporters who returned to Washington, D.C. for the follow-up to last month's much-publicized Stop the Steal rally. Far-right radio show personality Alex Jones led the group, which marched back and forth around the National Mall, stopping briefly for a speech by Michael Flynn. Flynn is the recently pardoned former national security advisor for Donald Trump, who flew over the crowd in Marine One, the presidential helicopter. But well before the day's events had started, the brutal violence which has come to characterize far-right assemblies was already spilling over.
I fear that's not going to be the case, because last night I saw a video where these folks, might not have been Proud Boys, but some Trump supporters punched a female and a woman in the face. She had a helmet, but still punched a female in the face. And cops said, get out of here, to those aggressors, versus actually arresting them on site.
Footage we captured today of an officer receiving medical treatment from men clearly identified as Proud Boys seems to lend credence to accusations by local activists that the police are effectively siding with the right-wing demonstrators.
I'm here at Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, D.C., which police have just opened back up after blocking this morning in an apparent attempt to avoid confrontations between local Black Lives Matter demonstrators and pro-Trump far-right forces which descended on the city this morning. But it seems to have done little to avoid violence.
These cats right here, they're peaceful now because it's only daytime. And honestly, not every Trump supporter comes out here to get into fist fights and brawls and stab people, but those Proud Boys do. You know, and those, their enthusiasts, those who want to be them, do. The 3%ers do. They love violence. White supremacy loves violence. They love the monopoly of violence. That's why white supremacists prefer to, like, adore, at least visibly adore, police. Because police, you know, they function with the monopoly of violence.
For many of those who protested last month's Million MAGA March, the apparent coziness between the police and the out-of-town groups is a familiar dynamic. Photos showing officers grinning while posing with attendees in Make America Great Again gear, and footage of police standing by while Trump supporters vandalized Black Lives Matter signs circulated widely at the time. Whether they'll be permitted to engage in such behavior again remains to be seen. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
Another correspondent in Washington, Colin Campbell, says that President Trump is promoting street rallies with misinformation about the country's electoral process.
But really what this all comes down to is the misinformation that the U.S. electoral process was widely corrupted and flawed. This, of course, is an ideology or a concept that is constantly being promoted by the current U.S. President Donald Trump, even though there has been no evidence supporting these claims. This week, we saw a case being thrown out of a text out of the Supreme Court rejecting a case brought upon by the state of Texas trying to delegitimize the votes of several other states in their electoral and election results. So it would seem, without so many words, that the Trump administration is trying to overturn the will of many Black Americans in many of these states across the country. And yet still, you have many white aggrieved men who want Donald Trump to stay as president, who say that they don't want to see a presidency under the former vice president, now president-elect Joe Biden. And that's why you've seen these protests storming in front of the White House and, of course, near Black Lives Matter Plaza.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and EU Chief Ursula von der Leyen will hold one more crisis call to decide whether or not to abandon post-Brexit trade talks. Now, that comes ahead of the Sunday night deadline that London and Brussels have set to hammer out a trade deal. British negotiator David Frost has met with his EU counterpart, Michel Barnier, for last-ditch talks in Brussels. In the meantime, UK's British, that's the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, says that fisheries and the level playing field remain two sticking points. It says Britain needs movement and flexibility from the EU. Both British and EU officials have expressed pessimism about reaching a deal. They say that there are a strong possibility of Britain leaving the bloc without a trade deal. Now, that's why British ministers have reportedly warned supermarkets to stockpile food amid the possibility of a no-deal Brexit. A Sunday Times report says that the ministers also told suppliers of medicine and medical devices and vaccines to store enough for 6 weeks. The government is concerned about possible shortages as talks with the EU over a post-Brexit trade agreement remain deadlocked. Prime Minister Johnson is also planning an exit operations committee in case of a no-deal scenario. A couple hours ago, I talked to Minna Taylor, and she provided us with a more detailed picture of the situation as the UK and the EU are sliding toward a Brexit without a deal.
I think the viewers have to understand, this 31st of December deadline is a completely arbitrary one. There is no particular legislative reason why it has to be. Therefore, any conversations around whether or not Mrs. van der Leyen and Mr. Johnson can actually choose to see if there's some room to iron things out and perhaps avoid a no-deal Brexit, that is completely up to them. But what we're getting right now is a face-saving exercise where the Prime Minister wants to appear to be the man who's delivering on his take-back sovereignty from the 31st of December. We're in charge of our own destiny. The bottom line is a simple one. Even if the 31st happens and there is a, quote, no deal, there will still be bits that need to be ironed out. You'll have to engage in new protocols and processes and agreements with new trading partners. So this idea here that we're being taken to a cliff edge because it's politically expedient and also it suits this take-back control narrative, I think it's highly dangerous. And I think the public and the wider global community watching what has clearly become a chaotic situation should bear this very, very firmly in mind.
In other news, Indian farmers, angry at agricultural reforms, have intensified their anti-government protests near the capital, New Delhi. Authorities have increased security around the capital as more farmers are expected to join the demonstrations. They rejected Prime Minister Modi's assurances that the new laws would increase their income. Six rounds of talks between officials and farmer union leaders have also failed to resolve the challenge the government is facing. Farmers fear the laws could pave the way for the government to stop buying grain and leave them at the mercy of corporate buyers. Before the legislation, farmers sold the produce at government-regulated wholesale markets. The government has defended the reform, but agitated farmers want it to be repealed. Tehran has summoned the German ambassador in protest of a statement by the European Union. Tehran supports peace in Afghanistan, but suspects the U.S. has hidden intentions despite the push for peace talks between Kabul and the Taliban.
We support peace and its restoration in Afghanistan, but we do not trust the U.S. intent. In different times and circumstances, Americans have proved they're not trustworthy and that one cannot be optimistic about them. Therefore, we advise our friends in Afghanistan to be wary of the ill intent of certain countries, especially the U.S.
Araghchi is visiting Kabul to finalize a strategic Iran-Afghan partnership. He said that Tehran believes the Afghan people should themselves decide how to advance the peace talks. He rejected outside interference in the country, but said that any country willing to help bring peace should be welcome. Adakci also stressed that the Taliban militant group is a reality of the Afghan political landscape, and ignoring it would lead to continued conflict and bloodshed. He said the Taliban and the government should reach a peace settlement that would benefit all the Afghans. In Morocco, main Islamic groups have rejected a plan to normalize ties with Tel Aviv, and that following a deal brokered by the United States. The religious branch of the co-ruling party, PJD, called the move deplorable. The Unity and Reform Movement also denounced all attempts at normalization, calling them Zionist infiltration. Unlike its government coalition partners that backed the deal, it took the PJD 2 days to react amid divisions among the party's senior leadership. On Friday, Morocco's major opposition party, Adel Hassan, condemned normalization deals with Israel as a step in the back of the Palestinian cause.
On Thursday, Morocco joined the list of Arab nations that normalized relations with Israel. The U.S. President Donald Trump announced the news on his Twitter page. He said the two sides decided to start full diplomatic relations. Morocco was among those countries that never had official ties with Israel since its occupation of Palestine in 1948. But in unofficial levels, the two sides have always shared relations and intelligence. In 1993, after Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization signed the Oslo Accord, Rabat and Tel Aviv began a series of low-level ties. But Morocco suspended the relations after the outbreak of the Second Palestinian Intifada in the year 2000. That is why Rabat now called the normalization deal a resumption of diplomatic relations. Several reports by Moroccan media indicate that King Mohammed VI has sought to restore ties with Israel in recent years. But the government has denied or remained silent about such news.
The normalization between Israel and all the Arab and Muslim countries is really nothing new, at the exception of that this normalization is coming out to light. All these countries have never declared war on Israel and enjoyed excellent ties with the Israelis. Therefore, the only difference today is just this relationship is overt, so we're learning about it, about the exchange of diplomatic and normalization between Israel and these countries. It's just a mere propaganda and an advertisement for Netanyahu to boost his image domestically because of his domestic troubles at home.
Morocco agreed to this rapprochement in return for American recognition of the kingdom's claim over the long-disputed territory of the Western Sahara region. In February, Israeli media reported that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had lobbied the U.S. to recognize Moroccan sovereignty over the Western Sahara in exchange for the deal. Such a move gave Morocco what it has for long wanted, but it also undercuts an independent movement in the Western Sahara region, which has rejected Morocco's claims of sovereignty. The Polisario Front, an independent movement from Western Sahara, slammed the U.S. move and said it highly regrets Trump's decision. But the people of Western Sahara are not the only ones who are angry at the U.S. and Morocco. Palestinians have denounced the agreement also. The Palestine Liberation Organization said Morocco's decision was unacceptable. The resistance movement Hamas said that Israel uses every new normalization deal to increase its aggression against Palestinians. Morocco's royal court said that King Mohammed VI had called Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and reiterated his commitment to the rights of Palestinians to have their own state. But it seems that Palestine has a hard time to believe the king.
Now, Morocco is the fourth Arab country to normalize relations with Israel since August in a U.S. brokered agreement. The U.S. president claims that his move is aimed at bringing peace to the region, but experts say that Donald Trump is following the policies of Israeli lobbies in the region. Now, each Arab state has gotten something in exchange for signing the deal with Tel Aviv, but the United States took its own share as well. Although Trump claims that these are foreign policy achievements, military sales, and economic deals that he signed with these Arab nations tell another story.
Behind the news that Israel and Morocco will establish the first formal diplomatic relationship, that lies almost six decades of close, secret cooperation on intelligence and military matters. Israel has helped Morocco obtain weapons and intelligence gathering gear and learn how to use them. Tel Aviv also helped Rabat to assassinate an opposition leader. In return, Morocco has helped Israel in matters like spying on other Arab countries. The two sides have had no problems contacting each other. The only thing they needed was a broker. The U.S. made that deal happen, and in the meantime, struck a deal for itself. Following the announcement, the administration of Trump has moved forward with a major arms sale to Morocco. The package is worth $1 billion and includes drones and precision-guided weapons. The White House has reportedly sent a notice to Congress about the potential deal.
We saw with the United Arab Emirates that the Americans promised to sell the F-35 and still didn't manage to get this deal off because the Israelis are blocking it and imposing specific conditions to keep the superiority over any other country. Therefore, with the Morocco wants some armed drone. Actually, it could have bought these armed drones from Turkey, and Turkey is supplying European countries and the international market with its most advanced drone, particularly after the last battle that its drone went through in Azerbaijan-Armenian conflict. I don't think it is the sale of arms that is attracting Morocco. I think it's a pressure from Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who wants to gather as many countries, Islamic and Arab countries as possible before he moves in and for Saudi Arabia to announce its official normalization with Israel.
This would be among the first drone sales under the Trump administration. Morocco is the latest country to agree to normalize relations with Israel and strike a deal with the U.S. as well. First, it was the UAE. The country announced its decision to establish diplomatic ties with Israel in August. In return, Washington provided Abu Dhabi with F-35 fighter jets. Bahrain and Sudan followed suit, with Sudan being removed from the U.S. blacklist of terrorism sponsor countries. White House senior advisor Jared Kushner said a similar deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia could happen soon. For now, it's unclear what the U.S. will give to Riyadh in return for striking a deal with Tel Aviv.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shmanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who is talking the art of law.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this pretty cool Sunday, December 13th, 2020. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast, or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please stay tuned until the end of the program. Again, welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, dear friends, are very useful and important to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us in normal days. However, I say normal days, you know, these days with the outbreak of coronavirus pandemic around the world, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic, and that's because of the global protocols. And here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Nicolas Perrin from France, from Austria, Harold Seuss, and from the US, Don Glucka have sent us reception reports. Well, Nicolas, Harold, and Don, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And as usual, a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later in our program, I read their emails and letters, including Konstantin Provatorov from Ukraine has sent us an email. Konstantin Provatorov is one of our regular listeners. Also from Greece, we have an email from Nectarius Manousas. Thank you. From the Philippines, we have an email from Arontio. Arontio is also one of our regular listeners. From Algeria, we have an email from Bashir. Also, we have an email from Patrick Traverse from England. Thank you all. Again, dear listeners, stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back after the music with all these kind letters and emails from around the world. This is Listeners Special, and I'm back with an email from Ukraine. This email is from Konstantin Provatorov. Konstantin is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear staff of IRIB English Radio, greetings from Ukraine. I have had a great pleasure in logging in to your station and sending you my reception report, and I hope that you will kindly verify it. Also, I have enclosed to this email an audio file of your recorded broadcast. Would you be kind enough to send me your QSL card with a view of Iran's holy city of Mashhad, Imam Reza Holy Shrine? Thank you in advance." Also, greetings to you, Konstantin Provatorov from Ukraine. I do express my appreciation to you because of writing this email. Konstantin Provatorov from Ukraine, and thank you for enclosing an audio file of our program. Yes, we received it. And what a pity we can't send you any item, including a paper QSL card, and also, as you have requested, a postcard with the view of Iran's holy city of Mashhad and Imam Reza's holy shrine, peace be upon him. As I said, what a pity we can't send these items to you, and that's due to the outbreak of coronavirus. Anyway, after the disease is controlled around the world, we can get back on track and the protocols are removed, and then we can send you paper QSL cards and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. Thank you again, Konstantin Provatorov from Ukraine. Write to us soon. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Okay, here we have an email from Greece. This email is from Nectarius Manousas. Nectarius is also one of our regular listeners. Nectarius says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I would like to report a reception of your broadcast received here in Greece. If my reception report of your program was correct, I hope that you will send me your QSL verification card or an eQSL, which will do too. In case that you will need more program details for the verification, please let me know so I can get back to you in the future. In this email, you can also find a few technical details of my reception, which I hope they will be useful to your technical staff. It was really fun listening to your broadcast. I learned things for sure. That's the magic of the radio. And I definitely would like to hear you again in the future. Till then, best of 73s. Greetings to you, Nectarius Manousis from Greece, and many thanks for writing to us. Unfortunately, paper QSL cards are not available, as I have mentioned several times during our programs. However, after the disease is controlled globally and the protocols are removed, we will send our dear listeners around the world paper QSL cards and our souvenirs. Anyway, this mutual relationship should go on, so write to us soon and tell us which programs you like the best. Thank you again, Nectarius Manousis from Greece, for your great email to IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Stay tuned! Welcome back. Here we have an email from Algeria. This email is from Bashir. Bashir says, first of all, I greet IRIB radio staff and all the listeners around the world. May God Almighty give us the strength to counter and defeat this deadly disease outbreak, which is spreading worldwide. Every day I hear from the media about the COVID-19 outbreak. I'm not a doctor or a specialist, but I can see it has caused great damage to the world, inflicting death. I hope the vaccines of this deadly disease will be distributed very soon among all the people in the world, regardless of their race, color, or financial status. Thanks to IRIB, as always. Greetings to Bashir from Algeria from IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for writing this email to us. And thank you. We're so glad that you enjoy the programs. And as you said, we also hope that the disease is controlled and everything gets back to normal and gets back to normal daily life. And this is our hope. This is our wish. Anyway, thank you for writing to us. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Bashir from Algeria. Also from the Philippines, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Arun Tio. Arun Tio says, dear IRB English Radio, I am Arun Tio from Manila, the Philippines. I'm enclosing the details of my shortwave radio reception of your programs. I'm glad to tell you that I'm listening to the broadcast from here in Manila, the Philippines. When I tuned in, I heard some Persian music, I presume, which I liked so much. Then a male speaker talking about coronavirus and interview on COVID-19. I hope that my reception report would be acknowledged with your QSL verification card. Also, I wish you all good health and happiness. Let's stay strong in these hard times and fight the pandemic. Best regards from your listener in the Philippines. Greetings to you, Arun Tio from the Philippines. Greetings from Iran to Philippines and to Arun Tio. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio, and many thanks for enclosing the details of our shortwave radio reception of our programs. And we're also glad that you enjoyed, as you said, heard a piece of music, Persian music, and then the rest of the programs. Arun Tio from the Philippines, please tell us In your upcoming emails, tell us which programs you like the best. Tell us your views about IRB English Radio programs. Also, our wish is good health and happiness for you, Aaron Tio from the Philippines. Dear listeners, what about a short break? Welcome back, dear listeners of Listeners Special, the Sunday program. Here I'm back with an email from England. This email is from Patrick Travers. Patrick says, I found listening to your English broadcast this evening very interesting and enjoyable. I would be very interested in learning more about your broadcast, and I would welcome any information. Please, will you send me a program schedule and pennant or any other publicity manual? First of all, salam and greetings to you, Patrick Travers from England, and thank you for writing to us, writing to IRB English Radio. We are so glad that you enjoyed our programs in IRB English Radio. As you said, you found it very interesting and enjoyable. Yes, this mutual relationship between us and you should go on, and we are waiting for your emails. And in your upcoming emails and letters, please tell us which broadcasts and which programs you like the best in IRB English Radio. And as you've requested, you want the program schedule. Dear friend Patrick Travers from England, you can find our program schedule in our website. That is www.parstoday.com/en. And there you can find IRB English Radio program schedule. And about the souvenirs, including pennant or other publicity manuals, as I have mentioned several times in our programs, sending any material on behalf of IRB English Radio is temporarily halted, and that's due to the outbreak of coronavirus. After the disease is controlled, we can send our dear listeners around the world the items, including pennant, publicity manuals, paper QSL cards, and postcards. For the time being, please write to us soon and tell us which program you like the best. Thank you again, Patrick Travers from England. And dear listeners, here we've reached to the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
My name is Chris Dampier. I'm retired. I'm coming up to 75 years old, and I live in Hertfordshire. That's about 30 miles north, Sydney's in Hertfordshire, 30 miles north of London. And I've been a shortwave listener now for about 60-odd years. Overall, I find the programs of RRB very interesting, obviously complete opposite to what we're learning in the media in Great Britain. This is obviously, again, it's a political situation in your country, but obviously, it gives the enlightenment of your view of your side, and particularly your part of the world, as to what's going on. Particularly some of the news in the Middle East is not covered here in our local media. In fact, during the last week, the local media has been just obsessed with Brexit and Mr. Boris Johnson, and anything else that's happened on the international scene has really pretty well been ignored. A message to our listeners is obviously keep listening to IRIB, because obviously you're providing a very good service in giving an opposite view of what a lot of the media are saying in another part of the world. And I think this is important. Otherwise, not everyone gets one point of view, and there's nothing outstanding on the other side. And possibly the other side is right. And this has quite often happened before. We'll be right back.
And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us, and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be speaking about a very important problem connected to the subject of divine unity or monotheism. This is the subject of the unity of God's lordship, or the unity of lordship. In Arabic, we call this Tawhid-e Rububi, At-Tawhid al-Rububiyya. We can explain this concept by taking recourse to a few verses of the Holy Quran. In order to properly understand this concept, it's necessary to remember that when the Quran was revealed in the Arabian Peninsula, most of the pagan Arabs at that time admitted that God exists, that he is the creator of the worlds and the universe. This is something that we can gather from a lot of the verses of the Holy Quran. For example, in the 25th verse of Surah Luqman, God says the following, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, وَلَا إِن سَأَلْتُهُمْ مَنْ خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ لَيَقُولُنَّ اللَّهِ. If you ask them who created the heavens and the earth, they will say, it is God. Also in Surah Zumar, in the 38th verse of that surah, God says something similar. وَلَا إِن سَأَلْتَهُمْ مَنْ خَلَقَهُمْ لَيَقُولُنَّ اللَّهِ. If you ask them who created them, they would say God. So what exactly was the difference between the beliefs of these pagan Arabs and the Quranic beliefs, or the Tawheed and monotheism that the Prophet brought? The problem was this, that although these people admitted that God created the universe, they said that after God created the universe, he handed over the affairs of the universe to a series of demigods, whose responsibility it was to oversee the affairs of the universe and take care of it. This was the main point of difference between them and the Quranic message. Because the Quran says that, no, just as God is the creator of the entire universe, he's also the creator of, he's also the overseer and regulator and manager of the affairs of the entire universe. This was actually the reason why these pagan Arabs worshipped idols and these demigods, because they said that these are the beings that whose responsibility is to oversee our affairs, so we should worship them. In a similar manner, in the time of Hazrat Ibrahim, the Prophet Abraham, alayhi salam, there were people who worshipped the stars and other astronomical bodies because they were of the opinion that these were the beings that had an influence in the world, right? And that the overseeing of the affairs of the realm of existence had been handed over to them. One of the beings of which was the human being. Even though it was God who had initially created man. It's for this reason that Hazrat Ibrahim, the Prophet Abraham, alayhi salam, when he was arguing with them, he denied this idea that these beings were the overseers of the affairs by stating that if they were the overseers of the affairs of the universe, these beings would not be subject to cessation and termination and setting. We were looking at the problem of God's lordship and unity in God's lordship on the key. Inshallah, in the forthcoming sessions, we'll look at this more. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The decision by Joe Biden to nominate General Austin as Pentagon chief has drawn a new wave of questions about the corporate ties of people Biden is choosing for his administration. Those ties are especially relevant when it comes to the Pentagon, which spends hundreds of billions of dollars every year on weapons and other supplies. It's important for the Secretary of Defense to bring to that role an independence of thoughts, and it's deeply concerning when any nominee is coming straight from one of the major military contractors, said Daryl G. Kimball, the executive director of the Arms Control Association, which pushes to reduce nuclear weapons and military spending. He added, Raytheon, I would note, has an enormous financial stake in upcoming decisions by the Biden administration, the Congress, the Secretary of Defense. Inside Raytheon, officials were said to be excited by the prospect of a board member becoming defense secretary, according to a person who works with the company. But that person and another who works with Raytheon cautioned that the appointment could bring unwelcome scrutiny to the company. Even members of Biden's own party had urged Biden to stay away from nominating anyone for the defense secretary's job who came directly from the world of military contractors. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson, writer. This article is published under the heading, Biden picks Raytheon board member Lloyd Austin as Pentagon chief. Here's the details of this article. Joe Biden has reportedly decided to nominate retired Army General Lloyd Austin, currently a member of Raytheon's board of directors, to serve as Pentagon chief, a move that comes after initial front-runner Michel Flourney faced mounting opposition from progressive anti-war organizations and activists. Biden's rejection of Flourney, a hawk, and Booz Allen Hamilton board member, was viewed as a positive by some progressive groups, but the reported nomination of Austin was hardly welcomed with open arms. Tremendous gratitude to over 2,500 individuals who took action and contacted the Senate to block Flourney's appointment. Code Pink, part of a coalition of anti-war organizations that mobilized against Flourney, said recently, "Get ready, General Austin, we're coming for you." Daniel Bryan, executive director of Watchdog Group Project on Government Oversight, tweeted that Biden's selection of Austin, who served as head of the U.S. Central Command during the Obama administration, spells bad news for civilian control of the armed forces and any real distance from the military-industrial complex. Others similarly raised alarm about the selection of another retired general, particularly one with close ties to the weapons industry, to lead the Department of Defense amid a growing push by the Democratic Party's left flank to cut the Pentagon's budget and bring U.S. wars overseas to an end. According to Politico, Biden's transition team has appointed at least four retired generals or admirals and a former top enlisted Marine. While the president-elect has vowed to suspend arms sales to Saudi Arabia and end U.S. support for the kingdom's catastrophic assault on Yemen, the person Biden has reportedly picked to lead the Department of Defense is on the board of Raytheon, a key supplier of bombs to the U.S.-Saudi war against Yemen that has lobbied aggressively in opposition to curbs on arms sales to the Saudi-led coalition, noted in this Times reporter Sarah Lazar. Because he has been retired from the military for fewer than 7 years, Austin, like President Donald Trump's former defense secretary, retired General Jim Mattis, must receive a congressional waiver to serve as head of the Pentagon. Mattis received a waiver with an 81-17 vote in the Senate and 268-151 vote in the House, but the majority of those opposing him were Democrats or caucus with him. The Washington Post reported recently. They included Senators Tammy Duckworth, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, and Bernie Sanders. John Rainwater, executive director of advocacy group Peace Action, said recently that Austin's current role on the board of Raytheon, one of the largest military contractors in the world, is no more side issue given the company's stake in ongoing overseas conflicts. Biden will quickly face calls to block arms sales to the United Arab Emirates that include Raytheon missiles, noted Rainwater, who said Congress must press Austin on such arms sales during his confirmation hearings. The revolving door between Pentagon and industry can easily impact policy, Rainwater added. We have here a double whammy. Number one, concerns about generals instead of civilians in charge, and number two, working for a mega contractor who benefits from some policies and whose profits are threatened by others. Last month, as Common Dreams reported, Representatives Barbara Lee and Mark Pocan sent a letter urging Biden to pick a defense secretary without connections to the military-industrial complex, a demand that Peace Action said should be basic common sense. American national security should not be defined by the bottom lines of Boeing, General Dynamics, and Raytheon, Pocan said in a statement at the time. Instead of draining the swamp, Donald Trump ensured that his Pentagon lined the pockets of America's most profitable defense contractors. Joe Biden has an opportunity to take profits out of policy and build back better. The American people deserve a defense secretary that puts the American people's safety above corporate profits, he added.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. One of the important advices that have been given to us by the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam is not to be hasty, is to take our time ponder, to contemplate, and even at times if we are unable to do it ourselves, to seek assurances from others who are able to assist us. Again, those people who we should seek assistance from, who we should seek counsel from, are also mentioned in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and I'm sure this has been mentioned in previous programs as well, of who a person should seek counsel from. We cannot just seek counsel from anybody or everybody. Even in that, this hadith that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions, or that we will mention today from Imam Ali alayhi salam, has a practical impact, has a practical implication on that particular act of seeking counsel. And that is that if a person is hasty, if a person just, you know, dives head on into something, the chances of him making a mistake is far greater. The chances of him falling and stumbling, you know, regardless of what that thing is or that action is that he wishes to perform, whatever it may be, the chances of him not achieving the objective that he aimed to achieve in the beginning, you know, is far greater. So the Imam, you know, as obviously the hadith has come quite clear from the explanation that the Imam alayhi salam is reported to have said that haste causes stumbling. That if a person just dives into something without really paying attention to the other aspects of it, for example, some aspects could be, okay, what are the needs that are required for this action? Who are those individuals who can help me with this action? What are the possible benefits of this action? What are the possible losses of this action? You know, where will I, for example, you know, have difficulty achieving this? What parts of things are easy? And so on and so forth. So this is like a proper plan, a proper, you know, sitting down, a pondering session, if you like to call it, a self-realization session, in which a person kind of establishes for himself, you know, the angles of this act, where to do it, how to do it, why to do it, and all these type of things need to be understood. Obviously, every single act that a person does will have different levels of this type of pondering, the different levels of this type of contemplation and thought process. Even again, as I mentioned, the concept of counseling will require this, who to counsel, who to seek counsel from, and so on and so forth. But if a person just, you know, dives headlong into it without any of this, you know, the likelihood of him falling and stumbling and creating mistakes and doing mistakes, you know, are far, far greater and far higher. Hence, you know, we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that in all our acts, in all our, you know, things that we aim to achieve or do, we take our time, we seek counsel from those who should be sought from, inshallah. Until next time, my dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This hum.